Dispatch Boy. Overlooking Phoenix. From high above in the Star Worldwide Network studios. Badge Boys. Stories, insight, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. And now, here they are, the Badge Boys.
Welcome back to another edition of Badge Boys, the show where two cops talk to the community. I'm retired Silent Witness Sergeant Darren Birch.
I'm retired Phoenix Police Officer Jason Schechterly.
And we have a heck of a show. Our first segment is Trish Knudsen, retired SWAT officer. She's going to talk about a horrific fallen officer experience that is so close to our own Jason Schechterly. Then we're going to go into cop talk. We're going to talk about PTSD, officer suicide, unfortunately. Then the last segment, my favorite segment, we're going to have heroic headlines, stupid suspect stories, and so much more. So stay tuned, stay informed, and most of all, you're going to be entertained.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Badge Boys. We'll be back right after this.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
The house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Because I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
Be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADA in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Badge Boys with retired Police Sergeant Darren Birch and retired Police Officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
Welcome back to Badge Boys, everybody. Exciting week. Darren, I got to tell you, I love how in sync we are because our guest today, we had lunch together a little over a month ago to talk about public speaking and critical incidents and being retired and this, that, and the other. And I happened to mention to her, I said, you know, I'd really love for you to be on our podcast. Can I set you up with that? And she was all into it, said, no problem. And I come in the following Wednesday to our podcast to talk to you about it. And you said, hey, guess who I scheduled for our podcast? And I'm thinking, how in the world can you and I be this in sync? Which is pretty cool.
So, I love it. I love it.
Robin, what do you think about that?
I've told you both off the air before just how special this connection is you guys have for Badge Boys. It's something very kinetic. It's that energy between the two of you. It's a synergy.
Well, today is incredibly special, and I will give a very brief background. This is one of the, we've done this before, but this is a very special guest, so you are going to hear Trish Knudsen twice, today and next week, because we have two very, very important topics to talk about. But today is near and dear to my heart. And again, small world, you never know what's going to happen. People who have listened to this show, people who have heard me speak, they know a little bit about my background. March 26th of 1999, a Phoenix police officer named Mark Atkinson was shot and killed in the line of duty. Very dark day for the city of Phoenix, obviously. But then on my side, it was a very powerful moment. It was a moment of clarity for me. And let's not forget that there was a family and a lot of friends that were deeply, deeply affected by the events that day. Mark is the reason I became a police officer. The sole reason that I made it through the process and hit the streets and became a police officer. So fast forward 20 years later, and I'm having lunch with our guest today, Trish. And again, we're talking about public speaking. We're talking about our critical incident. She was in a shooting, and she drops the bomb on me that she was the one to give Mark mouth-to-mouth the day that he was shot. And can you imagine taking me back to that day, me standing in front of my TV and my APS, you know, blue-collar gear and what I'm witnessing, and the person at the scene 20 years later is sitting at the lunch table with me. So with that said, we are going to talk today about what we call a 999, and that is when an officer is down. And we are going to honor the memory of Mark Atkinson. We are going to talk about somebody who had a powerful impact on my life, but we're also going to hear from Trish's point of view, what she did that day and how it changed her life, mostly for the better in a lot of ways. And I couldn't be more honored and more happy. So Trish, welcome to Badge Boys.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you.
You know, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you became a cop? I love where this is going to go. As tragic and as horrible as it is, I can't wait to hear you and Jason talk about that horrific, horrific moment. But tell me, I know a little bit about your backstory.
Right.
You weren't a police officer at age 18 and into 21 and so forth. You had a whole life before you were a police officer.
Yes, and being a police officer was not a dream by any means of mine. If anything, it was just the opposite. I grew up in Houston, Texas. We lost my father at a very young age. And we grew up in a low-income, high-crime area in Houston. So I saw officers come into our neighborhood routinely. I saw what they did firsthand. And to me, it was very scary to watch an officer, and I thought they were crazy for
doing
that job.
That's called intelligence. That's called intelligence.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I was committed back then as a young child to never be an officer. That was the one choice I made in my life right away, was that I would not be an officer.
It's dangerous.
Yes, it's crazy. So because we didn't have a lot as a kid, the one thing I could do was play sports. So I focused all my attention into sports and athletics. I went off to college, played on an athletic scholarship. I played some international ball. And then my dream was to be a college coach, which I did for 5 years. But back then, there was no money to be made in coaching, unlike it is today. Thank goodness. At about 5 years, I decided I needed to pay bills, so I needed to find a new career path. I needed to do something different.
You're like a starving artist.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Radio here.
Right. Singing to the choir here.
So I, in a sense, was giving up on my dream job, and I needed to find something else to do. So my decision during this transitional phase in my life was to move to Phoenix and become a Phoenix firefighter.
Intelligent.
Yeah, well, greatest job in the world.
Ever. Exactly. And that was my thought. So I picked up everything, moved to Phoenix, and unfortunately I didn't really research the way the hiring process went. I missed the timing window for putting in for Phoenix Fire. And during the first 6 months of being here in Phoenix, I met some police officers, and again, during this transitional period, they talked me into putting in for the police department. And I thought, well, I'll just do that, even though in the back of my mind, I had made that decision long ago that I would never be a police officer. But I thought, oh, it'll be a transitional job. I'll do it just long enough till I can get hired by fire. So, of course, I get hired right away. I go through the academy, and I fall in love with the job. And that's it. Coming out of the academy, what ends up happening is I get assigned to Maryville Precinct. And that's where my connection begins with Mark Atkinson, Officer Mark Atkinson. I get assigned to the 83 Frank Squad, which is a second shift squad out in Maryville. Very busy. We pretty much, the second we left the precinct, we were running
non-stop
calls all day long. And you might have an hour or two at the end of the shift to do paperwork. And that was it every day.
Once shift three comes in.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And maybe get a little bit of a lunch in there too.
Maybe.
So you were busy. And Mark and I were on the same squad. And immediately when we met, we connected. We became friends. We became best friends, actually. He had a passion for the job like none other. He loved the job. He loved the community. And for me, it was a job. I went to work and I did a job. And I was always envious of him because he had a passion for it. He loved it. And it was his life.
Reminds me of Jason.
Exactly. Exactly. Same connection there.
Thank you. I'm going to pull a Robin today and get all
emotional.
It's just so amazing.
Close.
It's amazing sometimes how worlds collide. It is so close, but it's also humbling. I'm sitting here thinking about like myself and how I was impacted that day. But Trish was on scene. Trish, yeah. This was her. I never met Mark. I didn't know Mark.
He was that catalyst.
My connection
your 9/11.
Mark was my 9/11, yeah. And my accident was 2 years to the day after. I never heard his voice. I didn't see him after being shot. I did not attempt life-saving measures on him. I'm sitting 2 feet away from somebody who did. Do you, understand how humbling that is? I'm just like, what's this, Rob, in our 24th episode, and you cry all the time, which I love, but I'm the one who's getting all screwed up today. So
I am too, man. I got to tell you something. She just said that that was her best friend, and you said she breathed. She was the one that gave him out.
Trying to bring him back. Trying to bring him back.
That's got to be hard enough to be that.
But I want to go back to that day. I want to. Sure. I want to not only for our audience to hear what this is not just something you hear on the news. An officer was shot and killed
person.
On the day.
Right.
But it happens 150 times a year. That's fine.
It was personal.
There's a lot more to it.
Exactly.
The call, the emotions, and like we talked about at lunch, I would love for you to share with the audience the reality of it. I mean, some of your thoughts while you were there, it is not anything like you see on TV.
No.
It's not anything that you think of in your daydreams of like, what if? It's not like that. What the reality is what I love hearing. So if you wouldn't mind sharing from what happened?
To be honest, it started with every shift you start with a briefing for the first 30 minutes. And we went through our briefing, we came out, and it was so ironic some of the things that led up to the event. When we walked out of briefing, one of our squad mates walked out and kind of looked around, and the feel of the day was different than other days. And you guys as officers understand that. There's days where you walk out and you know something big's about to happen.
Get a vibe.
Yeah. And I remember we walked out of briefing and one of the other officers stated that something big was going to happen today. It just had that sense in the air for this shift, the start of shift. And there were a couple ironic things that happened, and some of them were funny. Every day at the beginning of shift, you get your assigned patrol car, you bring the car up to your personal vehicle, and you load your box of tricks, your plastic container that has everything you need for that shift.
Your office on the wheels.
Yes, exactly. You take that out of your personal vehicle, you put it into your patrol car, into the trunk, and then at the end of the shift, the reverse happens. You take that plastic container.
It's a great feeling.
Oh, yeah.
On and off switch.
Yes.
It's a ritual.
Every day.
It's a ritual.
It's,
I love it.
Over and over, every day, the same routine. Well, on this particular day, on March 26, I was loading my stuff into the trunk of my patrol car, and Mark Atkinson comes across the parking lot, and he's giggling. He had a giggle, and he's giggling, and he's got a smirk on his face, and he's holding a book in his hand. And I just start laughing because it's a workbook that I had given him probably 6 months earlier. 6 months earlier, I'd gone to a seminar out in Vegas on street survival, and it was all about officers being ambushed in the line of duty.
Oh, my God.
And I'd given him this book. He couldn't go to the training because he had a newborn at home. But he was interested in the training, so I'd given them the book with the thought that, Mark, I need this book back. I want to keep it for resource purposes for me. And so he told me, yeah, I'll give it back to you in the week. And that week turned into a month, and I kept bugging him, and I figured, well, sooner or later, this book will pop back up. And it's funny because here he is the day that he was killed. He's walking across a parking lot. He's got this book in hand, and he gives it to me, and he's like, I thought today would be the day that I would return this book to you. And he gives it to me, and now in hindsight, the meaning behind that. And we sat at the back of my vehicle, and we talked about officers being ambushed. We talked about the workbook and what I had learned in the seminar, and we had about a 10-minute discussion about this. So I put the book away. Mark goes on his way, and I'm getting ready to shut the trunk of my vehicle. And when I do, I look down at my gear, my little plastic container. And for the I was a year and a half on the department at this time, and I had carried my stuff in my container the exact same way every day. And amazingly, the stuff that goes in that is your operation orders, your fingerprint kit, your first aid kit, all those things. Well, I looked at my container, and my first aid kit was at the bottom. And when I'd first come out on the street, I'd put it at the bottom of my container because I thought, Phoenix Fire is so quick to arrive on scenes, I'm never going to use my first aid kit. So I got it out of the way. I put it at the bottom of my container. So on this day, I look at that and I think, you know, if I ever need to use anything out of that kit, I'm probably going to need to get to it quickly. So on this day, I actually reach into my container, I sort everything out, I grab my first aid kit, and I put it on top of all my gear, and I shut the trunk, and I go to work.
How amazing is that?
Who would have thought 2 hours later I would be grabbing that first aid kit? But it's just ironic, some of the stories that led up to...
Prophetic,
For the same guy who gave you the book back, for the same guy
about
who talked about
yes.
officers being ambushed.
Yes.
And he was...
The officer.
Ambushed.
Two hours later.
Tell our audience, it was, I mean, I hate to say this, it was a long time ago. It was 20 years
Correct.
Ago. What? I know what the call was.
Yeah.
You were on duty, though.
Right.
Tell the audience what the call actually was.
Yeah, we were working a problem bar, per se, in the area that was known for drug dealing. And it was kind of our goal to set up and kind of clean up the area. And what ends up happening, the short of it is, we at different times for the first couple hours were, as a squad, rotating in and out, watching the bar. And then there was no activity. So we decided, well, we'll just come back later. So everybody pulled off of the bar, and Mark stayed. He said he was going to stay a few more minutes, and it wasn't but a short time later that we hear Mark get on the radio, and he's talking about he has people leaving the bar, and these were suspected drug dealers, and the car pulls out onto the street, the suspect vehicle pulls out onto the street, and Mark gets behind the vehicle, and he puts this out over the radio, and gives us a location, and he's updating his location. They didn't make it far. The suspect turned into an industrial area right close to the bar. And Mark follows him in his patrol car. And unbeknownst to Mark, one of the turns they took a quick turn north, which was a blind corner. So Mark obviously lost sight of the vehicle for a brief second. And in doing so, what ends up happening, and what we know from witness accounts, is that the suspect vehicle, immediately comes to a stop, and the two of the three suspects jump out, take off running in opposite directions. One suspect stays in the vehicle and hunkers down, and it's an armed suspect. He's armed with a handgun. And what ends up happening is Mark comes around the corner in his patrol car, sees everybody running. He puts it out over the radio that we have a bell out, meaning suspects running. And that's the last you hear from Mark. And what ultimately happens is that as Mark turns that corner and proceeds northbound, the suspect that's in the vehicle hiding jumps up and starts delivering rounds into Mark's vehicle, striking Mark twice in the head and instantly, or at least that's a thought, instantly killed him. Yeah. And what happens is his car veers off and hits a telephone pole on the up a little bit further on the road. And actually wedges between this telephone pole and a large bush that's on the side of the road. So what we hear as officers is you hear Mark go out behind this vehicle, he gives his location, he gives updates, and then you hear bell out. So you know most likely there's a foot chase. Exactly. And then it's radio silence.
And which is unusual.
And very eerie. For every officer, it throws up a flag.
It is a horrible feeling.
Yes.
Radio silence.
Yes.
Terrible sound.
For you people listening out the audience, what you're expecting as an officer is giving directions
right.
and locations where the suspects are running.
Right.
That just goes hand in hand.
Yeah, or updates of I have someone at gunpoint, or you hear the heavy breathing from an officer chasing who has lost
most
his
times.
Mic. Yeah.
most times.
So there's usually a lot of activity following a bailout notification on the radio. And on this day, there was nothing. It was radio silence. And you kept hearing the radio dispatcher call for Mark and call for an updated location and call for information, and there was nothing. And unfortunately, and as an officer, as a responding officer, because, of course, we, all the available officers, started to head his way to help out, in your mind, you're thinking of all the bad things that could go wrong. And then the calls from civilians start coming in from the public, and those are calls that radio dispatch is putting out. It's a patrol vehicle wrecked into a pole, shots fired, officer down, everything that you don't want to hear. And
truly worst case scenario.
Literally everything you do not want to hear.
Yeah. And it was hard. I was probably a mile and a half away from the scene. So I'm driving on sidewalks over median.
That day?
Yes. doing everything I could to take the quickest route there, which we know how that is. Yeah.
No, I just love how you, this is what I want to hear.
I'm retired, so.
Yeah, give it to us.
me and you are both like, we can say whatever we want. But driving on median sidewalks, you, especially in an Oscar Down scenario.
And you can't get there soon enough.
Yeah, everything goes out the window.
Can't get there soon enough.
It was hard to process because in my eyes, Mark was invincible. If there was an officer who was invincible, it was Mark. He was such an incredibly good officer, well-rounded officer. And I couldn't even fathom something bad happening to him, let alone him being killed. So as I'm driving, I'm trying to think of, well, he's wrecked his car. He's been in a gunfight. He's hurt, but he'll be okay. I turn up the street. There's a lot of things going on. I get to about a half a block away from him. And I jump out of my car, and I'm oblivious to everything else going on in the scene. There's a lot of things going on, and I take off running to Mark. And I see him in the car. There's another officer trying to gain access to the car. That officer yells at me to go get my CPR mask, which I run back to my car. I open the trunk. Everything's thrown everywhere except for my first aid kit, which is still on top of all of my gear. So I grab that. I come back up, and by now we've gained access to the car, and seconds later, I find myself standing over Mark doing mouth-to-mouth on him, trying to, breathe some life into him, knowing. And as officers, we're not supposed to show emotion. We're not supposed to have emotion. We're supposed to do our job, and we're supposed to see everything objectively. And that was my conflict that day, was the, I want to be mad. I want to be crying. I want to have all those emotions, but I can't as I stand over him, trying to breathe life into him. And then the objective side of me, that officer objectivity, is telling me Mark's dead. And I don't want to believe it, but I know the reality of it. And it was such a hard position. I had such a conflict going on in my head and trying and not believing any of it as it was happening in front of me. And what ends up happening is the fire department comes out, remove him, help us get him out of the car. We load him up in the rescue unit. They take him off to the hospital. And then soon after that, we follow. And we are brought over to the hospital. And as a squad, we're put into a room off to the side. And one of the officers happens to be the same officer who was at the car with me doing CPR on him. Officer Scott Messino walks into the room and informs us that Mark has passed, that he's dead. And it was such a... Immediately you feel all the emotions. You're mad, you're sad, you're upset, you're devastated, you're overwhelmed, yes. And one of the things, I know what a heavy heart was now, because it felt like my heart could fall out of my chest.
Your heart literally hurts.
Yes. But one of the greatest feelings that I had was betrayal. Because this community that we had given heart and soul to every day, and especially Mark just didn't respond to calls. He was part of the community. He knew... The people in the community knew Officer Atkinson. They didn't know Trish Knudsen. They knew Officer Atkinson. And I felt there was such a feeling of betrayal, because how could you do this to him?
You need someone to blame.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Isn't it always the way? All people, how do you do this to him? And that's a great, we're going to talk in our next segment about PTS and officer suicide and things like that. But you're sitting here. How do you? You mentioned earlier when you got on scene, a lot of people who aren't police officers, who haven't been through an academy, who haven't answered calls on the street, to be able to put into perspective. When you got there, you had heard a lot of things.
Right.
You'd also heard the worst thing, which is the silence. But when you got to the scene, you knew that shots had been fired. You knew that an officer had crashed a car. Officers don't crash their cars.
No.
Something is clearly wrong.
Right.
When you got on that scene, you weren't concerned about people with guns. You weren't concerned about bad guys. You were solely focused on
Mark,
your friend,
yes,
your squad mate, your fellow officer. Everything else faded away. And it's easy to say that's surreal. It's easy to say, you got caught up in the emotions. But the truth is, you did what was necessary.
Correct.
In the moment. There was his life being saved is what mattered.
Right.
And how do you not worry about... What if you get shot? You didn't care.
There's
you didn't
even the think ambush. About it. The possibility of ambush is
you
huge.
You didn't even think about being shot.
No.
That's
when you have one of your own that's down. I mean, the I'm married into kids. I'm not a parent, but you think about you with your children. If something, would you worry about anything else? And that's how we were because there was such a tight bond.
Well, and I've been on, all, the three of us have been on what we call 907s, 906s.
It's different though.
Where an officer needs something.
Yeah.
A 999. And I did go on a few of those.
Right.
It's
a whole different level.
I would love to try and describe it, but
you can't.
Again, you'll hear a headline on the news, officer shot and killed, officer dies in a car accident,
it's
whatever.
It's a headline.
It's a headline.
For the cops
but
there, it's earth-shattering.
When you're actually there. So, Mark, do you remember his call sign that day, Trish?
530 Frank.
530 Frank.
Yeah.
I know what that means. A lot of people don't know what that means.
He was senior officer on that squad, wasn't he?
He was senior
officer on that squad, was he not?
Yeah.
He got the good...
to run and play a little bit.
He got the good beat being 530.
Yes. Perfect cop for it.
Yeah. If you were 530...
I'm sorry, 830 Frank. I said 530. I apologize. Yeah, yeah. 830 Frank.
Yeah, I was at 500.
Different. I'm sorry.
If you were 835 Frank... You weren't having a very fun day.
You're assigned to a beach.
Yeah, you were having a fun day. 830 Frank.
He got to roam a little bit.
Okay, 830 Frank. So...
That's what actually made him available to sit a little bit longer at that bar initially.
But
it gave him that freedom.
Trish, you had just spoken to him 2 hours before that. Well, probably less than that because via radio.
That's what I remember was that stuff. Standing in the parking lot.
What you remember standing in the parking lot. Yes. And I have a lot of memories, Darren, I know you do, between what takes place in a briefing and what takes place when you get your stuff out of your personal car, into your police car, it truly is. It's like putting on your cape. It's like it's flipping a switch. It's go time. It is.
Yeah.
For the next 10 hours, and you know, I had little. We all have different things, but I would, you know, go to the clearing barrel and I would check my gun, just pull the slide back just a half an inch to make sure the round was chambered. I would listen to the click of the holster. It's a mindset. Mindset is everything.
You go into cop mode.
I mean, I talk about in my inspirational closes, I talk about all the time, mindset is everything. It's no different than every day when you're going on a 10-hour shift. You have to get in cop mode. And there's some ironies that day. The book.
Yeah.
The talk of ambush. He's giggling.
Yeah.
And 2 hours later, he's dead. And
that was hard to process.
That's the surreal part. How do you process, like, that's not possible.
How did this just happen?
I was just talking to this guy.
Yeah.
And again, let's not forget, now there's a 21-year-old kid out there. He was 6 months old at the time.
Yes.
And his widow, Karen, I know, God bless her soul, I've met her in a very ironic, unique situation at the birth of my child. But...
It was a long road for her.
It was a long road. And Darren and I, in the next segment, are going to talk a lot about PTS.
Absolutely.
I want to bring up, too, because as the only person in this room that has never been involved in law enforcement, we forget about the one human element, the guilt factor, because you guys weren't there for him. And I'm sure that... And it wasn't that you weren't there for him. It was that you beat yourself up about not being there. And he's there by himself.
Well, and that's the hard part.
That's the human thing.
Our squad was so very close. We were a young squad, but we were a very close squad. And we had made that promise because we make those promises, as we've discussed.
I will die for you right now.
Yes.
I will die for you right now.
And with Mark, I had made that promise that if he ever needed me, if there was ever anything that bad happened, that I would be there for him. And there was some guilt along with the I wasn't there, you know, and you always want to be there. You don't ever want anyone to go through what he obviously experienced alone. And it's out of our control, and you have to acknowledge that. But go ahead.
And this is a perfect segue for our next segment, because now we're going to talk about that squad, because what's so beautiful about what Robin said is it goes right into how does a squad survive this? As the dust settles, as the reality sets in, you've lost an officer, a fallen officer. How does that squad survive? And there's a beautiful story to this, is there not?
Yes, yes.
And we're going to go into that next week.
Yes, I can't wait, because there is, again, I owe every single good thing in my life today I owe to Mark Atkinson. I truly do.
And there's one beautiful aspect of this story that's a silver lining to it,
it really is.
Have.
And that's what we should always look at because, and Robin brought this up, I love that you brought up the guilt factor, but as I preach all across this country, life is about choices. And you know what? At the end of the day, that day, Mark chose to stay behind. Mark had the availability, and he made that choice to not go look for something else or go answer a radio call. He made the choice to follow those guys. And again, I pray to Mark all the time. I talk to Mark all the time, and I owe him all of the good things in my life all these years later. But we have to look at all parts equally. There's the guilt and the surreal factor, and there's also the simple fact that Mark made his choices that day, and this is what results in it. Cops do that all the time. So I can't wait to get into our next segment about PTS because I have some powerful thoughts about that. And because you and I have, man, Darren, we have very different perspectives on that because of life choices and what we've each been through. So, Trish, it goes without saying, obviously, I love you to pieces, and you are going to be a phenomenal public speaker.
Thank you.
And we will talk much more about that in next week's segment. So come on back very soon, and you'll hear Darren and I talking about PTS.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Batch Boys. We'll be back right after this.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
The house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Because I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
Be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADOT in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Batch Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Batch Boys.
Welcome back to the next segment. I tell you, Jason, that was riveting. I can't wait to continue our conversation with Trish Knudsen.
Yeah.
Because there is, God, I hate to use the word silver lining, but there really is a silver lining to that story. In fact, I would go as far as say there's two silver linings. One is we had this great individual come from our community who wanted to be a police officer because of that tragic event, and his name is Jason Schechterly. The second is Trish was able to survive that event. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. She survived it.
That's
and
true.
We have such a beautiful, believe it or not, love story that will come next week. And I just can't wait to share this.
That's incredible. And I love that you said that. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. People all the time say, oh, that's such a cliche. Do you know why things are cliches? Because they mean something and they're powerful. And I tell people all the time, I'd love to say something that 100 years from now, somebody's repeating. Cliches mean something, and Trish is definitely the definition of that.
Personified.
And also what she described as a little teaser for next week, she was on scene of a friend who had gotten shot. Well, many years later, Trish was the one that was on the ground.
Yeah,
and
stay tuned for next week,
so
folks.
Stay tuned to next week. But Darren, you sent me an email earlier this week. That really... It hit home with me. I think it's a great topic, especially in today's world with just everything we're dealing with what law enforcement is going through, with how society handles themselves, social media, bullying at all levels, whether
some
it's...
Some ugliness.
Believe it or not, cops can be bullied. We just saw it with the...
we talked about that.
The Tempe officers getting asked to leave a Starbucks. Are you
kidding me?
That's like national news right now. Bullying is very real, whether you're in fourth grade or whether you wear... a uniform. And you sent me an email earlier this week, and I would love...
Let me tell you why I sent it.
I do, and I want our audience to understand this. Something that Darren and I strive for, and something that we enjoy about this, is we do not talk beforehand. We do not tell each other what the other person is feeling or saying. We are very different people. We have had very different lives, careers, and because of that, we have different emotions. So when Darren sent me this idea, I don't want to be rude, but I didn't even respond to his email. I didn't even say thanks. I didn't say got it. I didn't say read it, love it. I said nothing because I just wanted to absorb it. And so, yeah, why did you send me that email, and why do you think that this is a good cop talk for this week?
As you talked about, right now we're in an atmosphere with police where it's not just a thankless job. It's becoming a thankless, spit-in-your-face job. And there's that loud minority. And I mean that in the sense that there's a few people that are very disingenuous in looking at any video and twisting it to match their agenda. There's cruel, there's mean, there's a lot of ugliness. And it has an effect other than just them, you know, pursuing whatever career they want in terms of hate the cops, whether it be sports, political, what have you, activism. And I love activism. Our country was created based on activism. But there's people out there that are so disingenuous with their hatred, they're picking on anything. And what's happening, to, in my belief, my humble belief, is that police officers, to include jailers, to include anyone in law enforcement profession, it has a taxing effect. And when you have things that go wrong,
firefighters as well.
Thank you.
What they see.
The first responders.
The drownings, the car accidents.
It weighs heavily on us.
They simply want to save people's lives, and you can't, as Trish talked about, you don't always get to save a life.
When I became a cop early on in the 80s, I could go to a party and I could say, I'm a cop. And people would say, oh, tell me about that. Today, police officers, jailers, firemen, what have you, don't have that availability to talk about what they do. And that creates a very negative atmosphere in their personal lives where they can't vent, they can't talk. And the negativity that's inflicted on them. When they go to a store, I used to pull out my wallet and put the ATM card in, never worry about my flat badge being seen. Now I have to worry about that. I can't let my flat badge be seen because such negativity in the lines has happened. I've had people tell me I should be dead when they saw my flat badge.
Sure.
That negativity builds and builds and builds. And we're seeing an uptick in police suicides, and firemen suicide,
there's
military suicide.
There's at least three times the amount of first responders die by suicide than die in the line of duty.
It's epidemic.
Every year.
Three times. Epidemic
Try
proportion.
To imagine that.
And so that's why I sent to you, because I thought this was a good cop talk, especially when we talk about PTSD. And we just listened to Trish talk about something so horrific, the death of an officer. Can you imagine today, when just recently, I want to say it was in, I know it was California, when people were talking such trash about this female officer who was killed, and the people outside that homicide scene were saying she deserved to die. And to have that hurt and that pain, and then deal with your own personal, you know, struggles and trials and tribulations of life, and that all builds to a point where we're having officers kill themselves. And that's why I thought, and having been a jailer, and having dealt with every day, everyone's just screaming at you, such negativity, and then not to be able to go home and be able to vent to friends, family at parties and get-togethers and gatherings because someone's going to say something negative because you have a badge, you have a uniform.
Yeah, and I don't care what uniform you put on every day, whether you're an electrician or a nurse or a police officer. At some point, the uniform comes off, and you are coaching your children in their sports. You are dealing with friends. You're dealing with significant others, and you still have your bills to pay and your things you are looking up on the internet or the music you like to listen to. It's just about being a human being. So how these other people can so callously speak like that, the Sacramento officer hits home because she was so young.
Brand
and
new.
That was another one of those where
in training.
She thought things were code four. And she was helping a woman pack.
Yes.
And she ends up getting ambushed, shot and killed. But I want to bring this back to
absolutely
because I think PTS is, as you can imagine over the years, people look at me and what do you think they think my biggest adversity is? My appearance, right?
Absolutely.
How did you get through this? How did you get through that pain? How did you go through that? How do you look the way you do and have a smile on your face? And I know that there have been plenty of people who have gone through similar incidents to me who have taken their lives. PTS is inexplainable. Does everybody know what SIDS is? Sudden Infant Death Syndrome. Do you know why it's called SIDS? Because nobody knows what it is.
That's it.
Nobody knows why you put a three-month-old down for a nap and 2 hours later it's passed away. It doesn't make sense.
No.
PTS is the same way. I know why I'm happy in here, but what I want to talk about is, like, I sit across the desk from you, and there's two things in this world that I can't fathom, that I say to myself right now, if I had to go through that, I wouldn't make it. And those two things are the loss of a child and taking another life. Darren, you've done both. You've lost a child, and you have taken another person's life in a justified shooting. But you are, Jesus, everybody who listens to our show, you're happier than I am. You're well, more motivated.
I get to work with Jason and Rock and Robin. Hello.
So this is what everybody needs to pay attention to. What is PTS? Why do you get it? Why do you end up in the depths of you? I can't fathom taking my own life. And I wish I could speak intelligently on that. I don't have a PsyD. I don't have all the training. But I'm just speaking openly. I've been through what I've been through. You've been through things that I would say right now, that would end my life. It didn't end yours.
No. And I'm going to tell you something that will absolutely connect to you. And I know once I say this, you're just going to light up. It's the love of others. It's the love of a wife. It's the love of the children,
yes,
that surviving children. That's what survives you. In your darkest moment, when do you become the strongest? When you're there for them.
Yeah.
What happened to me happened to me, and I ended up going to child crimes, and I'm helping people. It was giving to the community, saving these other children from horrible tragedies that made me survive. Now, granted, there's a lot of failure to deal with it. That's why I talk a lot about denial. You know, you just put it to the side and just put your heart and your passion and your energy and your focus and your life into something bigger than you, you know, the community. So that's why we survive it. And I'm going to segue into the PTS. And I love how we're saying PTS, not PTSD.
Because it's not a disorder.
It's not a disorder. It can happen to anyone. So PTS, post-traumatic stress, can happen to a mother who loses a child through SIDS because she can't explain it. She can't wrap her head around it. But the love of her husband, the love of community, the love of the family, love of everyone helping her, that's what gets you through it. And when you don't have that, you feel like there's no way to survive and you could kill yourself. And that's why we need to start talking love. And that's why I started this whole segment with the hatred. We need to turn that hatred into love. We really do.
No, that's a beautiful thing. And for the officers out there, if you're feeling this, and we're going to talk about it more next week with Trish, but their squad went on. She mentioned Scott Messino.
Yeah.
In the earlier segment. Scott Messino is one of the greatest human beings you could ever meet. And he is a phenomenal things police officer. I love Scott
so much.
And this squad survived and they thrived and they came together, and we are going to talk about silver linings, but all the cops out there need to think about that. Okay, so something tragic has happened. Whatever, whether you go through a divorce, whether you lose a child, whether you lose a squad mate, whether you are trying to save somebody's a citizen in your community life and it fails, or whether somebody's looking at you saying, you know what, you can go to hell and I wish you'd die. You've got to come together and lean. Why are you here? And it's for something bigger than yourself. It's for the next person. It's for the people that you care about. And if you do that, you're right. You would not want to disappear from this life, right?
Exactly.
It's for when you live for somebody else or a bigger purpose, that's all you need.
You matter.
But how do we get there?
You matter.
How do we get there? And again, I'm not a doctor. I can't prescribe meds. I can't tell somebody why they have PTS. I'm just saying, as two guys who, one whose appearance is just ridiculously bad and...
Who's beautiful, by the way.
Well, thank you very much.
I agree.
And a guy who's sitting across me who lost a child and also took a life in a shooting. This is just normal, everyday stuff. This is just life. Life happens, right, Robin?
As how you react.
Don't you have a show called that?
Yes, weren't you on it?
Nice plug, my friend.
No, but life actually does happen.
It does. It's so true.
It happens to all of us. Don't take that away from yourself. Exactly. Why would you ever be able to get to that point? And again, I'm sorry for people who do, because I can't. I investigated. I spent 3 years in homicide. Here in the city of Phoenix, this is no joke. There's a minimum of one suicide a day in the city of Phoenix. And I investigated an awful lot of them. I made a lot of next of kin notifications. It was horrible.
In one night, my friend, in one night when I was working night detectives, we did 8 suicides in one night in just the city of Phoenix.
Yeah, in just the city of Phoenix. And so I understand it happens a lot, but we've got, life is precious. And the ones you leave behind are the ones who suffer the most. It is a final solution to a temporary problem. So I just encourage, if you are out there and feeling, I don't care what you do for a living, if you're listening to the show and you have PTS over anything that you've gone through in life, and you don't have to have been a cop, you don't have to have watched somebody died or given them mouth to mouth, you don't have
finances,
to have
lost
a child, it can be anything. Post-traumatic life, you're going to have changes in life, and they are going to be traumatic. And what you go through after that, that's the meaning of post. It's after.
But it slows down.
Reach out and get help. Do not give up on anything.
And remember, it's the down that makes the up so nice.
My Lord. Darren.
Let's go for the last segment, my friend.
Thank you for being so open about that.
Oh, gosh, thank you, my brother.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. All right, everybody. We will be back with Heroic Headlines. I'm sure a stupid suspect story
that I
really don't want to hear. And a little inspirational close. Come on back. Thanks.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Batch Boys. We'll be back right after this.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
The house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Because I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
Be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADA in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Batch Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Batch Boys.
Now, Jason, normally this is my favorite segment of the show, but
not
having
today.
Trish Knudsen in
this is a distant
studio,
distant second or third today. That's okay.
But in light of that,
we're still going to do it.
Hearing your heroic headlines and your inspirational close, it still makes me happy. It's still a happy ending, my friend.
Well, my heroic headline this week has absolutely nothing to do with any other part of the show, so that'll be good. I happen to love dogs. I happen to love
you do you
people.
Do.
I happen to love unconditional love. I happen to love all that stuff. And I came across a story that I just wanted to share, and it's a shout out to the Lee County Sheriff's Department in Florida. Inside the Lee County Jail, behind barbed wire and high security, is the utmost display of puppy love.
Aww.
It's been about 15 years. And the sheriff's office started a sell dogs program. Sell as in jail cell. Taking dogs from the Gulf Coast Humane Society and pairing them with inmates for 12 weeks of learning the basics of how to sit, how to stay, eventually how to be properly house trained, which is rather important. But the most significant change is not in the dogs. It's in the guys who train them. You definitely have to find a different side of you that you didn't know existed, said Joe Madden, an inmate in the program. Most of the inmates in the program are non-violent offenders. Obviously, we're not talking about the worst of the worst and death row, but non-violent people who are in there for drugs, probation violations. These are guys that are looking for a second chance. We all deserve a second chance, whether it be surviving a critical incident or that we made some mistakes and getting another chance.
Reinventing yourself.
And just like the dogs that they're training. So you sometimes feel like you have a purpose in here. Inmate Mark Lee said, then when you get the dogs and work with the dogs, it's like you have a purpose again. There likely isn't an exact correlation between puppies and recidivism rates, but if patience and purpose are what the men in the program take away, odds are they won't be coming back. And the dogs are also going to go out and make their future owners very, very happy. So to the Lee County Sheriff's Department, I mean, what a great way to just do something simple, fun, and full of nothing but unconditional love toward some dogs that deserve it and some people who deserve a second chance. So that's my hero of the week is Lee County Sheriff's Office. Awesome.
I love it. I love rehabilitation opposed to recidivism. And that is a great example of that. It's heroic. It's an absolutely great heroic headline. You brought us way up in the the heights.
Yes, we all feel good right now, right?
Yeah, we're in the heights of humanity.
So do me a favor.
Yes.
And make us all feel really bad about it.
I'll bring us to the bowels of inhumanity.
Yes, please.
Yes, so
please.
I'm going to bring us three stupid suspect stories. The first one, a Brooklyn woman whose Eileen car was allegedly swiped off the street Thursday lied to cops that her six-year-old nephew was inside it so they would respond faster. So this is a lady had a car ripped off, calls 911 and says, my six-year-old nephew is in the car. She told authorities that she returned and discovered the car missing. She then called 911 and claimed that her six-year-old was in it. Cops reacted appropriately. They respond in 10 minutes. They find the car with no child. So now they're, of course, upset and concerned. Where's this child? And then she says, oh, I just lied. So good news, you got your car back. Bad news, you're going to jail for false reporting. And appropriately so. Yes, and only in Brooklyn, I guess. This one is a particularly good one. I really like this. This is in Tennessee. And it's the 4th of July. And we had a really good 4th of July special. So this goes perfectly with that, really. I wish I had known about it. Stephen Ray Ham, 45 years old, fled the Humphreys County Jail at 8 p.m. on the 4th of July. Interesting.
Fled the county jail, escaped on the 4th of July
at 8 p.m.
Escaped.
He had been in prison for theft of property, burglary, motor vehicle, failure to pay child support, so he's also a deadbeat dad. But he loves the 4th of July. So he takes off and... Was this a situation where it was a diversion, right? Because just all the fireworks are going off, maybe you're using a diversion. No, he loves the fireworks because he returns 7 hours later.
He
comes back and turns himself back in after a night of enjoying the fireworks. So
that's not a stupid dude. That's awesome.
It's hard.
Come on.
Here's the stupid part.
Oh.
For 7 hours of freedom, enjoying a good firework display, you're going to do 10 years for escape.
Okay, that's a stupid
That's
part.
Pretty stupid. That's pretty stupid.
Whoa.
It is.
He came back, though.
Yeah, he did. It's a mitigating. I'll give you that. It's a mitigating, but so stupid. You know, watch it on TV, buddy, like I do. I watch it on TV.
Might be how he was able to get out. I mean, let's have some accountability on the...
We're not even going to go down that road.
Security of the jail.
That's a jail. That puts a whole new meaning to gaining your independence.
And now for the best stupid suspect story of all. I love this one. Cops follow trail of macaroni salad straight to robbery suspects. How do you ask? Well... This is in New York, another New York story. New York PD in Mount Morris apprehended three burglary suspects on a Sunday following a trail of macaroni salad they left behind during their getaway. These thieves broke in and stole cash at a register at the Build-A-Burger restaurant, along with the establishment's entire surveillance system. So they're smart enough to steal the entire surveillance system, the cameras and everything, so that they wouldn't be seen on camera. But they also stole a large bowl of macaroni salad. And the cops said that the deputies were on their hot trail pursuit as they found along the trail was the cash register part. So they found some trail of that. They found some surveillance parts. They found rubber gloves and they found some loose change. But what really made the trail hot was a macaroni salad, because these idiots were eating the macaroni salad all the way to their home and were spilling it, having a good time. So they literally followed the macaroni trail all the way to their homes. So I love to...
work is not difficult.
It's a nice shout out to these stupid suspects. We have a guy named Matthew Sepp. Ketko, 34 years old, James Marullo, 35, and Timothy Walker, finally a good name I can pronounce, at 23 years of age. Three have been charged with third-degree burglary, third-degree criminal mischief, and fourth-degree grand felony, and, of course, littering of macaroni salad. Okay, I made that last part up. Sorry.
I was going to say, really? Because Robin has never laughed that hard.
Insult on,
like, that was not
insult on injury.
That was not in the story. Robin has never laughed like that. So
so those are my stupid suspects. And now we need to bring
back. Well, those
back.
Were, I listen, this is what, our 24th episode? That might be the easiest you've gone on me in stupid suspects.
Yes, there was no cats being destroyed.
I'm going to be stuck on the guy leaving jail, though, to go watch fireworks. I love fireworks. I love Independence Day, and he came back. What's the problem?
It's called escape.
Don't give him 10 it's more years. Come escape. On. No, don't give him 10 more years. I'm gonna fight.
I'm with you. Give him 9 yeah, and a half. Yeah. 9 and a half. No, you need to bring us out of the bowels of our inhumanity. We need an inspirational moment from Jason Shackerly.
Yeah. God, you know, I'm trying to come up with these every week. I know this is what I do for a living, but I say the same stuff every time I travel the country and I share my story. So you guys always challenge me. But today, having Trish... And you know what I thought about driving here this morning? I thought about January 1st, 1992. And I wish this was on TV because right now Darren and Robin are both going, what the hell was I doing on January 1st, 1992? Well, I'll tell you what I was doing. I was laying on the ground outside of a nuclear weapons facility in Grand Forks, North Dakota. It was a breezy minus 40. I had slipped and fell shortly after New Year's Eve on my M16, and I snapped my collarbone in half.
Ouch.
And I remember laying on the ground, and all I could think about, I'm 18 years old, by the way, all I could think about was, how did I get here? How in the world am I here right now, laying on the ground in frozen North Dakota, and I'm not sure what my injury is, but I can't move, and it hurts. That was the first time I ever experienced that at 18 years old. And now that I am closer to 50, I've experienced several of those. How did I get where I am right now? How did this happen? And it's a perfect perspective on you cannot change the past. You cannot alter it. You cannot divert from it. It is what it is. And how you got where you're at today, how I got to where I'm at today, and I'm going through plenty of stuff right now, things that I don't share with everybody. And there are times when I'm alone at night on my couch watching TV that I think, how did I get here? But you know what? I always choose, because it is a choice. I always choose to think about, I know exactly how I got here. I got here because of beautiful things like Mark Atkinson, beautiful people like Mark Atkinson, and all the positive things that have led me to where I'm at right now. So there are some days that I go, it's January 1st, 1992. And I thought about that today, coming to talk to Trish, because look where she is now.
Her checklist.
Her checklist and I was too young back then to know why I was laying on that ground. I was too young to understand what that was going to propel me toward. But here I am now with a smile on my face doing the beautiful things that I'm doing in life, looking forward to every day. And while I know how I got here, you still have those days. So if you're thinking to yourself right now, how am I here? Try to focus on the positives, have the accountability and understanding, because there's reasons, and you just got to make the most of it. And what's tomorrow going to bring? Let's all wake up tomorrow and be thankful and be grateful. There's always something to be grateful for. God bless everybody. Thank you to Trish. Thank you, 830 Frank. I love you, buddy. I love you for everything. And your memory has not faded 1 ounce in the last 20 years. We will see you all next week.
Batch Boys. Thanks for listening to Batch Boys. Stories, insights, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Batch Boys, heard weekly and worldwide on Star Worldwide networks and all mobile devices. Batch Boys.